Welcome to this episode of Hear It From a Husky. I'm Dr. Lori Fiorenza, and today we're going to be talking about ways to increase student engagement through a growth mindset. I'm going to be joined by art teachers Mark Collins and Tracy Van Dynen, who will explain how they approach this in their art classes.
All right, so a few years ago, Mark and I, as we started teaching the same drawing class, had a conversation about just kind of assessing our classes, and we saw some areas that we wanted to try and improve on in the classroom. One was students were coming into the classroom with widely different levels of ability and experience and also interest. So we wanted to figure out how we could address that. Another issue that we had was because of that, we were teaching a one-size-fits-all, kind of what a lot of teachers do or did do, which is kind of teaching to the middle. And we saw that it was adversely affecting students' engagement, and the growth of the lower and ability level students were kind of stunted because the lower level students, the ability level students, were not as engaged with the material, and probably in certain times during the course of the semester were lost, and the higher ability level students were bored and felt like there wasn't any room for growth there. And then in addition, the homework completion rate, we would give homework to them to take home, drawing homework. And again, the higher ability levels with that, students would do well in the middle ability levels, but the lower ability level students would fall off. They wouldn't turn in the homework. And so that started really negatively affecting their grade. And so, you know, we pondered it and we started talking about it and we started making some adjustments. And where we've kind of landed with this after really kind of playing around with it for a couple years was we start with a pre-assessment to kind of see their level of ability in a way that gives us a baseline for each student's growth and content needs. So that kind of addressed that whole idea of really assessing where they were coming into the classroom and trying to meeting them there. And then we developed, based on their ability levels, we developed levels based on the curriculum that that created an equal challenge for all students. And so the curriculum really started meeting them where they came in. So lower ability level students, and it was all by choice. So it was kind of a choice-based curriculum. We really felt that as we started implementing that really started increasing engagement. And then another thing we played around with was introducing this kind of flipped classroom model to increase the content knowledge prior to kind of beginning of the lesson. And what flipping the classroom did, well, how we flipped the classroom is we started recording our own, the demonstrations that we would do in class where the kids are passively sitting there watching us do showing them how to do a skill or something. We then, and then we sent them off to at home to try and do this work, and they would get frustrated with it. What we started doing is recording these videos of our, what we would be, typically be doing in the classroom, shading or, you know, proportion out the figure or, you know, just the various demos that we would do in class. We recorded them, or we really started utilizing YouTube and found we have a huge library now of, you know, younger people, better looking people than us, better music, better, you know, kind of production level videos that showed that kind of taught the kids the content knowledge that they needed to come into class and do the work. And what we found with that component in particular, I think, and you can, you know, say what you think, Mark, but that component of itself, I think, really helped our students' engagement level. We saw, once we implemented all these things, we saw the engagement level of all students increase, because every student was, there was a challenge there. They felt like they were in their own lane, with us kind of scaffolding and pushing them up a little bit to kind of, you know, to promote growth in their ability level. But what that allowed us to do too was all the learning that happened in the classroom was no longer there was no passive and active learning. It was all active. They really started using the classroom as a kind of a laboratory. They came in with the content knowledge, and if they didn't watch the video, we would have them, that one or two students, maybe pull out their Chromebook and watch the video while we went around. And what started happening every day is we were able to go around and check in with each student and see, you know, how they were doing and give them suggestions for growth and push them, you know, individually while they're just kind of playing around with the concepts.
I think one of the challenges of or concerns with this level-based curriculum is that how do you make sure that each student, no matter what their ability level is getting the same basic fundamental concepts for that assignment. And the beauty of this is that wherever the student is in the levels, so whatever the complexity of the assignment they're doing, they're still getting the basic objectives of the assignment. They just, depending on their level, they're taking it to a different conclusion. But that's been a real plus as a teacher, because you're always concerned, well, I've got this wide range of student. How do I make sure that they're all getting these basics, but they're all getting it in a way that they feel that they're being challenged? So we here have some examples up here of the process as it unfolds. This is from a drawing class, and you can see each that we have three levels. I'm sure you could have more, but three's really worked for us. So this is the drawing. These are examples of student work prior to any instruction. And that's very important, because the students need to see where they are, as Tracy was saying earlier, from a base level with no instruction and no really understanding necessarily the projects. We want to see where they are. And you can see there's a very distinct difference between level one, two, and three. Level one's just line work with a lot of erasing. You can see that. Level two student had obviously already done line work previously here or somewhere else. In level three, that student has done both level one, level two, and they're interested in really exploring the figure in a more complex way. So in terms of the shading and the line work there. So this is how we're seeing kids come in, and that allows us to then instruct to their specific needs.
And one other thing with that too is that we really stress to them at the beginning, especially when the pre-assessment, that one, it wasn't graded, right? They were going to get a grade for it, but it was just going to basically be, you know, full points for it if they came in, put the time and effort and thought into what they were doing, didn't try and copy someone else, just showed us where they were coming in at. And we assured them that would be their basis for how they were going to be graded, because we're going to start from there, and when they turn in a project, we're going to be able to visibly see the growth that they've accomplished over that unit. So be it a figure drawing unit or observational drawing unit, and so that would be the basis for their grade, right? And so again, what we witnessed was that, again, especially in the lower ability level kids who came in from, they took an art foundations class, they kind of liked the drawing unit, and they said, well, God, I'd really, you know, I've never done that before, I'd like to, you know, investigate it in a bigger way, I'll take drawing class. And so these are the kids that are coming in wanting to do more. And then you have the middle level kids who have had some experience, done some, but they want to get better. And then you have these higher ability level kids who are definitely, you know, thinking they're going to go on to college. They've been drawing probably their whole life. You know, their parents were artists, or the home life was really kind of, art was infused in there. So, you know, and that's when we talk about ability levels, that's what we're talking about. But what that did is it helped, I think, all of the kids relax as far as, because this can be an anxiety-ridden discipline. It allowed them to relax and realize that they're not being graded based on what the kid across the room who's drawing incredibly well, you know, they don't have to be at that level. They have to show growth. And so I think that really helped with our engagement level. I saw that was one of the attributing factors too.
So once the students have done the assessment, again, with no instruction, then when we present the assignment, it's essentially a menu, and you can see that on this slide. So the students are given an option based on either their own interest or sense of how they could do, or in consultation with us, and they say, hey, I think I'm ready for level two, and we look at their assessment, absolutely go for it. So it's important, I think, that they see examples examples of what these levels are, and they see examples of student work so that they know that this is work that their peers have done. And you can see it's described right there what the various requirements for each piece, but again, underlying the level is the fundamental expectation of decent line work and understanding of proportion, understanding of gesture that basically transcends all three of these drawings. So that gets back to the idea that no matter what the level, all students are getting these essential requirements in their drawing.
And there's always discussion there too, as if a student picked a little bit lower level, like a level one or level two, and they got into the drawing and they realized, hey, I want to try a level, you know, I want to try a little bit more, adding value or add some environment. That was a discussion that we had, and there's you know, never said no, right? I mean, they were always allowed to kind of push themselves as far as they would like to go. So it wasn't set in stone.
So now what you see up here are just examples of the growth. And this was really exciting for us as teachers to see when we first were doing this, wow, it's happening right in front of us. So on the left was the assessment level one, and that's what the student was producing after the instruction and after building on a number of these basic skills that we introduced before the final drawing. So there's a level one growth, two growth, and three growth. Here's just examples from painting. Again, three levels are explained. You can see how it gets more, it's a more sophisticated and a more complex expectation of students. But again, the beauty of this is that a level one kid who's sitting next to a level three student, they don't feel intimidated by the level three because that's not where they are. So they can essentially, they're freed up to really pursue the same general challenge of the still life, but in their own pace.
So we have various examples from silk screen class, from Lenny Novotny's silk screening class. We all teach art foundations, and so and they're very simplified. The actual explanations of the levels are much more complex in the syllabus and in the unit plans that we share with them. So we've condensed these, but you can see how for a silk screening, level one is just an image with some text and one color. Level two is image text plus two colors. And then level three is image on an advanced surface or in a different, you know, varying surfaces and using different media. So, you know, the level difficulty goes up.
Something I've noticed is that on average, very, very few kids are doing level three in almost any project. And I guess I expected more, but it's like a release valve, you know, that the one or two, even though it's a very small number that'll do a level three, the one or two that want that challenge and are skilled to do that, capable of doing that, they walk away really feeling as if they've gotten something, they've taken on the challenge and really been able to meet it. So it's basically one and two I found in most projects that students
well,
do.
I'm finding that growing a little bit as we are kind of collecting student samples, and they're seeing like, oh wow, that's what a level three looks like. Because level three, I think for students can be a little bit abstract. And when they see student examples of that, I see that encouraging those ones that want to push themselves a little more. Oh, so yeah. As we do this year after year, I'm seeing a little bit of an increase in how many kids want to try and do that level three. And then the other thing we really stress here too is that, you know, art making is really the matter of learning from mistakes, and that there's not really failure if you've kind of figured something out about your art making practice or your concept development. If you've learned something and able to kind of apply that to another project, then it's growth instead of a failure or a mistake. And kids, you know, so again, we're trying to find these ways to kind of talk about our discipline in a way that really helps that engagement, brings down the anxiety level of kind of a vulnerable discipline like art making, and get them freed up to really just really focus on growing as artists and really kind of getting in and celebrating that.
So one of the challenges in any art classroom, I think perhaps more than some of the other academic areas, is how do you grade? And just over the last several years, we've built up this rubric, which is we think is clean and specific and logical and flows so that not only a clean, meaning it's the layout of it, I think, is very understandable visually. All the information is on one page, and it's written in such a way that a student understands that the grading is based off of these five different, essentially, categories, everything from how they work with the tools and materials all the way through comprehension, their effort level, how they participate, and then really getting all the work in. And then each of the categories is graded based on four different levels levels of, I guess, success, you could say, or achievement. And each one of those, the wording is slightly different, but it gives a student a very specific understanding of why they got the grade they did based on each category. So a teacher says, well, you got a 4 on your craftsmanship versus a 3, there's a very defined definition. So it takes away the kind of subjectivity that can come into the grading of an art project. And I think it's fair to students, because should they want to pursue the clarity of the grade, they can do that, and it's right there in front of them. So this has been a very helpful, streamlined, and I think advantageous way for not only teachers to grade, but I think it really gives students an understanding about why they got the grade that they did, because the explanation is right there.
And Mark, but don't you think, because we've been having this discussion for a while too, don't you think that we're really finding, especially with this kind of model of, is that the grade doesn't matter to kids who are going into our intermediate and upper level classes. Of course they want a good grade. They want to get an A. You know, that's a given. But they're not coming to they're not taking a drawing class or a advanced 3-4 grade. They're coming in here to be better artists, right? And so we're really, I think, with how we are delivering the curriculum, I think it celebrates that more than the grade. The grade is secondary or even tertiary when it comes to the kids, you know, building their repertoire of materials they're using and skills that they have, and then producing art that they, you know, that they want to take home, right? Like, we know in art that if a kid takes a project home, it was a good project and they felt success with it. And we're seeing kids doing that with all this work.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I've noticed that change in the last few years. Yes. And I think in a way too, as a teacher, it's kind of freed me up to move away from the grade as being sort of the primary measure of a student's experience in here. I think because they have more freedom to choose and they have more freedom to explore, they're more excited and confident in how they're approaching the work. And I totally agree. They walk away saying, I actually learned something. I grew, as opposed to I got some arbitrary number, which they're not going to remember in a week or a month anyways.
Which gets us to that, you know, we've been talking about this idea of not giving them zeros, you know, like that's a demotivator. You know, just we're getting an A can motivate a student's or getting the highest number of points for a project. Using that grade to kind of, you know, let them know you've got to get this done, I think is not helpful. I think, you know, giving them to where, you know, they see that, okay, because every kid has done some work on it. You know, half a grade, 50% is still an F, but it's not an F. You know, it's a grade that says, you know, you didn't complete this yet. And the discussion around that is, yeah, why did I get, you know, half the points on this? Well, you didn't finish it. It's not incomplete. You know, there's here and here are, and here is how you can collect the rest of the points. Do this, come after school, come to art club, take it home, do it, bring it back, and then we'll get reevaluated. That is much more motivator for getting stuff done than the actual grade. That's just kind of this little reminder, like, hey, this isn't done. What can we do about it?
One of the additional components to the grading, and just not even that so much, but the overall project is the reflection, which we try to do in most classes in the art department. So, and this is an example of of a reflection written by a student. The idea is that when the project is over, either verbally with the teacher or in writing on their website, they go back and reflect on the project. So what are the, usually what's covered is they have to articulate what the goals of the assignment were, and then also some explanation or description of the project, and then most importantly, what did they gain from the project? What did they enjoy? How was it positive for them? And also, what did they find challenging? What didn't they like? And this has also been really exciting for me, because I'm really amazed how seriously they take the written reflection. I think part of it is they feel empowered and they have things to say about their work. And so they'll write, and you can see this here, is a number of sentences that get into a lot of detail. And this isn't an outlier. Many, many kids of all ability levels will reflect with quite a bit of substance and thoughtfulness about what they did. And of course, the bonus here is that it does help with the school's goals of improving reading and improving writing, because here they are writing in an art class. And it also gets them articulating their creative process, which is, I think, very important in art, is that you're able to communicate why, how, and when you made your art. And I think it makes the audience more engaged in the work as well. So this has been a big plus.
Yeah, and I think if we're talking Bloom's taxonomy too, it's also having them analyze and evaluate their own work, and being able to kind of make an argument for why they should. We're not asking them to grade their work, but being able to talk about their work in a way that's not, oh, I like it, or this looks good, or I liked using, you know, this color palette, where they're really talking about the reasons why they used a certain color scheme, or why did they the composition that they chose to kind of finally go with, how did that help the overall meaning or feeling of the piece visually or conceptually? And what that allows us to do in the grading process is be able to grade using much more deeper information than just the subjective thing of looking at their artwork and saying, you know, this is good, this is, you know, or this was, there was growth here. But then there's this whole other level using higher order thinking skills to really kind of analyze and assess and make an argument for why, and that gives us a much deeper understanding of what the student was going through for the process and then the end result. I think it's helped.
Yeah, I would say, just sort of in conclusion, for me is, having done this with Tracy, I obviously wish I'd been doing this 15 years ago, because I think this is just a really, really good system and way of teaching and learning, and mostly because, number one, it empowers students. And number two, it liberates the students and I think the teacher to pursue within a certain framework their own creative ideas. And there's really nobody in the classroom that can't participate in the level that works for them. So for me, it's been a real game changer, and I would highly recommend that. I think you could do it in other disciplines as well, but it's been excellent for me, and I think for Tracy and me, and I think for our department.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that depending on the discipline, you get enough teachers that want to maybe, you know, that might look at this and say, how can we do it in our discipline? It took us years to kind of develop this, in just talking and evaluating and analyzing this process and changing it up. This has gone through a lot of iterations, and to getting to where I think we're probably still not done, you know, or, you know, we're always kind of tweaking and changing as we go along and always kind of making it better. So, the one other just little thing, a tool that I think we've talked about was this Modo, you know, because we grade on Google Classroom, they have this Modo where you can actually, instead of typing in and writing in it, you can write in comments saying, oh, you need to work on your value structure, you know, versus being able to use your voice to be able to say, you know, hey, Rebecca, you need to, you know, the value structure is a little off. You could probably pump up your darker values and, you know, and maybe it's looking a little bit too gray. Kids receive that personal kind of touch. They can hear the inflection in your voice, that you're not, that it's not a criticism, it's feedback, versus a text or writing on a paper or something that says that they can't, I think they find that more as a criticism than not. And I think that they, I've seen that help and them kind of going back into their work to make it better.
Completely agree.
Thank you so much for joining this episode of Hear It From a Husky. Mark, Tracy, thank you. I've really enjoyed hearing about how you are motivating students, engaging them in deep levels, and that tip on the Google feature to give audio feedback is amazing. So thank you. Really appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Hear It From a Husky. Stay tuned for more from our Husky faculty making an impact.